Linda Moulton Howe has been a reporter for Dreamland and Coast to Coast AM now for years. Linda Moulton Howe has been an investigator of crop circles and animal mutilations for many more years. She has done documentaries that have won awards on the environment. She is an invaluable resource. It began tonight that we were going to have one thing we wanted to get to talk to you about. That has now expanded to any number of things. There is so much breaking news with this NIDS report, with a report on the Sun, and with what Linda has lined up for us, chemtrails. There'll be more on that tonight. We've got a lot to talk about. So we're going to get the things that we had set up for you in the beginning to just sort of get out on the air first. Here from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is Linda Moulton Howe. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Art, and thanks, because there is a lot happening in Europe concerning the crop circle mystery. And last night I received a report about something extraordinary, an eyewitness to the creation of two crop circles in Hoeven, a southern Holland farm community about 90 minutes from Amsterdam.
An eyewitness.
Yeah, an eyewitness. And it was early Monday morning, June 7th, at about 12:15 a.m. This is the first formation reported in Holland this year so far. A 19-year-old named Robert woke up and looked out his bedroom window. And what happened next was phoned to me by Nancy Talbot, director of the BLT Crop Circle Research Team in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Nancy has worked with biophysicist W.C. Levengood in Michigan for the past several years to analyze plants from formations in Europe, Israel, Australia, Canada, and the U.S. Levengood hypothesizes that plants in some sampled formations are affected by a spinning plasma vortex that contains microwave energies. The microwaves heat the plant cells, he thinks, softening and collapsing the stems into the fluid patterns that we have come to associate with the genuinely mysterious formations. But Levengood does not know the source of the spinning plasma vortex. My full interview with Nancy Talbot is at my new website, www.earthfiles.com. Every day I am filing news reports about the environment, science, medicine, and real X-Files. All my Earth Files reports are both real audio and text with photographs, and I thank Keith and Rich Rowland for helping me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a brief excerpt from Nancy Talbot about what happened in Holland early Monday morning.
All right, here we go.
But as what happened is that apparently at 12:15 he woke up and knew to go to the window, you know, open the curtains and look out, and his window overlooks this little garden out back, and then this huge farm field, which is directly behind their garden. And what he saw, it's incredible. He described a small, misty, pinkish-purple light, not a sphere, more football-shaped, and a little bit smaller than a football, which was coming in over the field at a height of about 10 feet, maybe 12 feet over the field, from quite a distance away. It's an enormous field. He watched it as it came closer and closer and closer to this spot that is about 50 meters behind his house. And this is where one of the snow circles occurred a couple of years ago. There was a circle in mustard seed there last spring. He's had a couple of circles in other crops, you know, in that general area. Came right back to this, you know, to this area, and stopped. He said the word he used was hanging. It just stopped in the air and hung over this spot. Then it started to elongate. It spread out, I guess would be the easiest way to describe it. And it apparently spread out, becoming thinner and thinner, looking like a disc, was then how he described it. When it was about 30 feet in diameter, again, still hanging there, not moving at all except for this expanding motion, then he observed what he calls and that's Dutch for electrical discharge. And he and I have these signals we give back and forth because he doesn't speak English too well and I don't speak Dutch at all. And what he means is that he watched electrical discharges coming from the underside of this disc-shaped, misty, pinkish-purple cloud or ball of light. For I would gather, it sounded like 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 seconds. immediately over the field. Then the light phenomenon simply dissipated, was gone. He was very excited, threw on some clothes and went running out the back and squeezed through the hedge and into the field. And lo and behold, right smack where that thing had been was a 30-foot diameter circle in, I think it's wheat. They say grain, and I'm not sure which kind of grain they mean. And a 10-foot circle very nearby, both of which had not been there at 10 o'clock when he went to bed. It's still light in Holland at 10, and you can see, you know, whether it was there. And it wasn't. And here they were. I've never heard a description quite like this. Mm-hmm. In Sussex, I remember telling you about the Sussex one of a couple years ago, where an elderly man had gotten up in the middle of the night and looked out his window, and he also saw balls of light, is what he described, close to the ground, several of them, multiple balls, and then light shooting from the balls down to the ground and back up to the balls. And in the morning, they found a fairly complex formation in that location. So it seems like the formation process may not be one thing.
Right.
Maybe several.
And Art, back in the United States, the first unusual crop patterns this year were recently reported south of Annapolis, Maryland. Several fields had randomly down cereal crops that have a fluidity in the way they are laid down with multiple layers that cross at 90-degree angles. Over the past several years in the U.S., Levengood has found some of the greatest biochemical and biophysical changes in plant samples from these odd, randomly down crops that have a kind of scalloped edge to them often. And a similar phenomenon was reported to me today by an investigator in Illinois near St. Louis, where 15 fields have randomly downed winter wheat that has this peculiar scalloped edge and flowing, he said, quote, as if water had swept through the plants, unquote. Wow. And if any of our listeners find unusual down crop and want to help the BLT research team, they can call 617-492-0415 in Cambridge, Mass. That's 617-492-0415. Or fax Nancy Talbot at 617-492-0414. And now I would like to move on to
Linda, before you do, spinning plasma vortexes. Now, crop circles. Here we go again. Another year of crop circles, and it's really starting off with a bang.
Yep.
I had heard, you know, old Doug and Dave with their boards and chains. One of them died, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, so in other words, unless it's the ghost of Doug or Dave, whichever one kicked the bucket, then we've got something entirely different here. But spinning plasma vortexes.
That's coming from a biophysicist from research that he's done trying to reproduce the biochemical and biophysical changes that he has found repeatedly from many countries in the seeds, the stems, and the cells.
Emitting microwave radiation.
Yes, that is the energy that seems to reproduce some of these changes, and it would make sense that if there is a sudden heating of the water, but not enough to cook the plant, and it does go down to the ground under the impact or influence of this energy, that would explain what Peter Sorensen, the photographer, calls the magical bends that have no creases, that have no cracks.
Right.
I've seen many of them myself. You can't believe that you're looking at plants lying flat to the ground and there's not a crease or a crack.
Well, with respect to what these are, though, Linda, this doesn't sound like a traditional UFO report. So now can't we begin to imagine that as we have these newly discovered sprites that go up into space, and we have a lot of changing weather and weird stuff going on here on Earth, that these things, whatever the hell they are, could be manifestations of our Earth?
Well, I myself think that we are dealing with an advanced intelligence of some sort. I have no idea where it's coming from, but I really feel that we are dealing with some kind of advanced technology and that even if this remained translucent in that strange light, we can't second guess what kind of technology is at work beyond the fact that it's emitting some kind of energy that's interacting with the plants. And in the website at earthfiles.com, in this in-depth interview with Nancy Talbot about this situation, she goes into this 19-year-old 2 years ago was out in a field when all, and this is broad daylight, when all of a sudden he estimated it was at least 100 of spheres, glowing spheres, that ranged between grapefruit size and baseball size, and they came and swirled around him. At first he was alarmed, and the next thing he knew that he was waking up unconscious, right in, from unconsciousness, right in the middle of a formation, and that was 2 years ago, which is different yet again from the man in Sussex and his experience Monday night watching from his bedroom window as this thing that started out smaller than a football and then kept expanding to a 30-foot diameter disc-shaped object. And if you recall, Art, back in the days of Bentwaters in England, there were multiple military eyewitnesses who said that an object that reminded them of a translucent see-through aspirin somewhere between 10 or 20 feet in diameter on the forest floor suddenly sprang full-blown into a craft. So what kind of technologies are we dealing with, if that in fact is what this purple pink light is part of the mystery behind all of this phenomena. So I personally feel this is really an important story that for some reason in this one particular area in Holland, this, whether it's the geography, whether it's the teenager himself or what it is, they've had repeated multiple eyewitnesses seeing these spheres of light and now this extraordinary experience Monday night. And they're going to get some soil and crop samples from these two circles. And as soon as Levengood has done analysis and we have some sort of a report, I'll let everybody know what
we've
done.
I really want to know what's going on, Linda.
Yeah.
I really want to know.
And the remember the Barbary Castle, the incredible formation, 1991. This year, just a week ago, in a field about a quarter of a mile away from there, came down the most amazing Hebrew menorah. Peter Sorensen told me that it is one of the most extraordinary fluid lays of the crop that he has ever seen in a field very similar. And 2 years ago, it was the exact field where the Hebrew Kabbalah was also laid down, as if there is some kind of a repetitive theme even in some of these same geographic fields.
Wow.
So,
well, the implications there bear a little bit of thought, don't they?
They really do. And I think everybody listening who ever thought that Doug and Dave were the answer to any of this must realize by now they never were the answer. They are not the answer. And something extraordinary is happening. And there's also an extraordinary discovery in the area of what kind of defenses could we have against bioterrorism attacks such as anthrax, smallpox, and other infectious diseases. And what I'll do, Art, I'll begin this part of the report until we have to go to break and pick it up on the other end, and then we'll go into our contrail story.
All right. And we're going, we've got a man online named Charles Warren.
And we will be heading to him after the break.
And what it, will Charles Warren basically be telling us?
He has put together a website based on his unusual experiences of being surprised at what he has seen in the sky south of Philadelphia. And it also is, I think he's the first person who has been able to get a list of who has been visiting his site on a regular basis. And when we talk about this...
Is it about contrails?
The whole, yeah, the whole site.
All right, all right,
voted.
All right. When we come back, stay right there, Linda. When we come back, not only will we have Charles Warren, But I will have a story for you that should blow your mind from New Hampshire that will lead right into it. So we're going to talk a little bit about contrails, or chemtrails, if you will. Here's the way I'm going to lead into this. I think Linda will enjoy this. I'm sure our guest coming up will enjoy it as well, Charles Warren. It came just, a couple of hours ago, and reads as follows. Hi, Art. I noticed you're having a chemtrail convention tonight. Well, I don't know about that. We did break the chemtrail story on this program. It has now spread far and wide, more ways than one. He goes on, I have a somewhat appropriate, personal, embarrassing story to share with you. Having been a skeptic of the contrails until only about 3 months ago, I'm very alarmed at what's going on right above us here in the mountains of New Hampshire. There has never been flight patterns over this area in the past, but right now, it's like we're living in New Jersey or something. Our skies are filled with contrails, and on the days that there are not any, it's record high temps being set. It's getting weird, Art. Something that is too weird is the rash on my left thigh and the bumps on my hands and feet. I noticed a 1/4-inch by 1-inch rash on my leg last January. I was very sick, and the antibiotics weren't working that well. At that time, I associated the rash with being sick and being sick with the high stress levels, thinking that 1999 was going to be like, thinking what 1999 was going to be. That'll give you stress, all right. Anyway, the rash continued right through the spring, and so I assumed it was from the stress or that maybe listening to too much Ed Dames talk about the sun on your show. Meanwhile, I'd learned about the contrails in March, April, from your show. And as I looked around for signs, it was incredible. The number of people who were sick and or having blotchy rashes on their faces and who knows where else. I now have poison ivy-looking bumps on my hands and feet, and they don't seem to want to go away either. I've been using colloidal silver on those areas. When they turn raw, it clears up. Back to the bumps, which then don't leave. The rash on my leg has not responded to the colloidal silver at all, and it's somewhat like a scar now, but it gets irritated every once in a while and will be itchy at times. Now, look, I haven't had any doctors look at it yet because sometimes you just can't get yourself to go. Meanwhile, you're hoping it all goes away. You know how people are, so you don't go. Well, I'm getting a little nervous now, and half my family and my friends have these rashes that are inexplicable. Do I even want to know what I have? I don't know. If it attacks another area of my body, later won't even be an option. This is getting scary, Art. Seeing is truly believing. He ends it by saying, what the hell is going on? Where's Ed Dames when you need him? To think that I thought all you guys and gals were crazy at one time. Signed, a former contrail skeptic from New Hampshire. Linda?
Well, the contrail mystery has focused questions about what kind of chemical substances could be dispersed from planes making these odd patterns. And before the break, I was going to go briefly into a very important medical discovery that may, in the long run, end up affecting all of us with an oily substance. And the discoverer says, as far as he's concerned, his lab has not made anything that has been being tried from contrails. I told him about the reports from all over North America,
right,
of contrails that have had an oily appearance.
That's
when,
right,
the sun has been there, and
that's
that people,
right,
have actually reported an oily substance coming down onto their clothes and to their hands. If we could take just a couple of minutes to hear this, just as a lead-in to a very important anti-bioterrorism story, and then go to Chuck Warren.
Okay, he's ready, so go.
All right. This new discovery could actually be an answer to anthrax, smallpox, and other infectious diseases that would be dispersed by bioterrorists. It's droplets of oil coated with detergent that are so small they can adhere to the surface of deadly bacteria and viruses and literally explode the germs. That's why they're called nanobombs. Nano means a billionth, smaller than viruses and bacteria. But the oily substance is so safe, it can be sprayed right on people, plants, and animals.
Right.
This medical discovery is the work of Dr. James Baker, professor of medicine, chief of the Division of Allergy and Immunology, and director of the Center for Biologic Nanotechnology at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. He develops extremely small lipids and polymers that can be engineered at the protein and amino acid level. And the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, known as DARPA, started trying 5 years ago to find new ways to deal with bioterrorism. And for the last 2 years, DARPA has funded Dr. Baker's research into blowing up germs with a water and oil mixture in which the oil droplets are 1/100th the size of a human blood cell and coated with a detergent that disrupts the lipid coatings of the germs and causes them to explode. The U.S. Army will run tests with it in about 4 months. And I asked Dr. Baker how his oily water substance could be used if there was an anthrax drop or dispersion in the air over a surface.
Dr. Baker.
All right. Well, let me give you a specific scenario that's been actually in the news. Now, they held a mock attack in one of the subway stations in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that both materials, such as the train, the station, and individuals were exposed. Currently, the only way to decontaminate is to use very high concentrations of formaldehyde and bleach, which, number one, are very destructive to material, probably ruin any type of paint or fabric or type device in the area, and obviously are very toxic to human beings. So there's no real way to decontaminate the area safely and to decontaminate the people safely. This material can be used in a number of ways. You can actually, it kills up to a dilution of 1 to 100. And at 1 to 100, it literally looks like skim milk and has about the same consistency. And you could put it in a sprayer type device and literally just spray down the whole station, the whole car, and within an hour or two, you know, you could even spray it again, but within an hour or two, about 99.9% of the spores have been killed.
All of the anthrax spores will have exploded from this oily water.
Right. In addition, you can take the people that have been exposed and also treat them topically to decontaminate them. If there are wounds that are contaminated, you can take this material and irrigate it in the wound. So, in fact, you can go in and decontaminate people as well as the environment. And, in fact, by reducing the number of spores that are on people or inhaled by people, you can go a long way to preventing the toxicity and the death associated with anthrax.
Dr. Baker's oily water substance will also destroy cholera, the Ebola virus, and most other pathogens that also have a lipid coating. There's much more about this important discovery under Science and Medicine at earthfiles.com. And Dr. Baker told me one of the scenarios the Army will test this fall is dropping the oily water substance from airplanes. I told him about these eyewitness accounts of oily substances associated with unusual contrails and
yes,
even falling from the sky, and I asked him if he knew if any of this testing had already been done by the U.S. government. He said it's not his oily substance because the only material that he's produced has been for the small-scale tests conducted at his University of Michigan laboratory.
Yes, but what one mind has conceived of, obviously another may well have conceived of somewhat earlier.
Or they decided to just test dispersal of some kind of an oily substance before they did the Army trials. I mean, that is a question. And what is behind the unusual contrail activity?
Well, as a potential testee, Linda, I object. I'm serious. I mean, I don't want to be tested. I don't want to be a test guinea pig And half the crap they do turns out wrong and turns out, and, you know, one leg's liable to get shorter than the other or something. Who knows?
Well, the positive point of view is that if any of it is related to Dr. Baker's work, it could be that it is a blessing in disguise, because it could be in the long run, in the future, that it could save a lot of people's lives.
Right.
And behind this issue of what is going on in the skies over North America, Charles Warren of Swedesboro, New Jersey, is one eyewitness who was so puzzled by peculiar contrail sightings back on March 17th and May 23rd, 1999, that he took photographs and posted them on the Internet to ask for more information about them.
Well, let's bring him on, shall we?
Yes.
All right. And Charles Warren back in Swedesboro, New Jersey. Are you there?
Yes, Art. How are you doing?
Thanks, Charles. You're on with Art Bell and Linda Moulton Howe.
And Chuck, you live south of the Philadelphia International Airport, right?
That's correct. I live about 10 miles south of it.
And I understand that you've been seeing air traffic and contrails for at least 10 years there. So
yeah,
what was unusual back on March 17th when you took those first photos?
Well, the air traffic here is quite normal, departures and arrivals and flyovers. But on March 17th at 9 a.m., I walked outside my back door and was instantly amazed at an enormous checkerboard pattern to the south of my house. When I looked to the west, I noticed dozens upon dozens of contrails stretching from horizon to horizon, running north to south. And this went on until for approximately 4 p.m., and it just turned out to be a completely cloudy day. And it was actually started out to be the nicest day of the year.
Well, what especially was unusual about what you called the checkerboard?
Well, that was very strange looking to me. It had, I'd say, about four lines running east to west and two lines running north to south. However, the lines didn't go from horizon to horizon like the other lines did. They came to an abrupt stop, which is highly unusual. You just can't shut off a contrail.
Right.
I think you said it looked like somebody was playing tic-tac-toe in the sky, but they weren't playing with the circles.
They forgot to use the circles, correct.
But they were using the axis.
Yes,
unless an aircraft were to suddenly descend below the point where the contrail was being created, an aircraft in level flight would not suddenly just, boom, stop producing a contrail. No way.
Right, and these contrails, at least the contrails that form the checkerboard pattern, appeared to be at relatively low altitudes. I'm not very good at judging height, but they were not the very high altitudes that you see normally where the contrails are formed.
Most planes are up at about 33,000 feet, somewhere in that vicinity.
Right.
You would estimate these to be how much lower?
I would say that these were between 15 and 19,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chuck, did you try to get in touch with any airport or agency about this strange pattern?
Well, I've made several attempts, even up until yesterday, to contact somebody of authority or who has an official statement to give me. But I am sent through menu hell, and there's just no way of speaking to a human being anymore.
Now, so you have never gotten back any kind of an official explanation for why, for example, you would have something that looked like a tic-tac-toe crosshatch above your house?
No, and actually I have sent that picture included in my email to the FAA, to the tower at Philadelphia International Airport, and to several other organizations, and have never received a response back.
No reply, huh?
No reply.
What provoked you to decide that you would go to the trouble of putting those photos on a website after you took those photos on March 17th?
Well, as Art was talking earlier about the caller from New Hampshire, mm-hmm. I was the same. I was a skeptic. I did not believe there was anything unusual about the contrail story until March 17th. After I received my photos back in the mail, I decided I would put up a small one-page website and see if I could get some response and some answers to some questions I had. And the one-page personal home page is now up to 175 pages.
Okay.
And I receive dozens upon dozens of reports and photographs every day.
And I thought one of the most interesting parts of your website is what you call recent visitors to the site. And I counted just on what I downloaded Monday, June 7th. There are almost 50 agencies listed here. And if I understand, you began noticing within, what, the first week or so after posting the March 17th photos that you were getting repeat traffic to your site?
May I interject here for the audience that doesn't know about computers? With respect to websites, everybody, it's possible to track who's coming to your website, or at least whether they're coming from an official government agency or that sort of thing. That those informational statistics are available to a webmaster. And so, Charles, you are getting the alphabet agencies visiting, huh?
That's correct. And the tracking devices are available to anybody. I use
sure.
one called Extreme Tracking, and it's a very useful tool. And within that list that you have, Linda, is probably just the first week and a half that my small web page was on.
You want to roll through a few of them, Linda?
Yes. And I think right in the center of your page, it says Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Aeronautical Systems Center, repeat visits daily, Art. The list includes everything from
yes.
United States Senate offices,
yes.
NASA Langley Research Center.
NASA and Langley?
NASA Langley Research Center, Marconi Aerospace Systems, Monsanto, the NOAA Aeronomy Laboratory, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Oh, my.
The Federal Energy Technology Center, the Yucca Mountain homepage.
What?
Yeah, the Air Force Combat Climatology Center.
Whoa!
Nellis Air Force Base. Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, Rocky Flats Environmental Technology Site, the Space and Missile Systems Center for the Los Angeles Air Force Base, the Department of Defense Computer Emergency Response Team.
Holy moly.
The National Renewable Energy Laboratory, the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command. The Naval Undersea Warfare Center, Division Newport.
Linda. Oh.
It keeps going.
I understand, and we'll keep going with it. Hold it right there, please. You too, Charles. Oh, my. Look who's coming to dinner. We'll be right back.
Nelson's a job in the city. Waking for the man every night.
And get one free. Linda Howes here. Chuck Warren put up a web page. Simple little thing. Contrails. Chemtrails. I don't know what to call them. We've been talking about them on the program here since springtime. Really spring. Broke the story here. All these agencies coming to his website causes the mind literally wobbles. Linda, hit us with a few more. My God, the people coming to see this website.
Yeah. They're in the dozens. I mean, it's up to probably about 50 on this list, and probably more have been added since I downloaded this on Monday. And the one that really just hits you right from the page is Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Aeronautical Systems Center. Repeat visits daily, along with all those others. And for listeners, Art, I'd like to make sure that everybody can go to that site, which is Contrail Connection, all put together as one word, mm-hmm. contrailconnection.com. And it would be very interesting for people who can bring those photos up now on that site to look at them while Chuck, if you could explain what happened on May 23rd with that next set of photos that you took that has that really unusual diamond shape in it and what's happened since, but start with May 23rd.
Okay, May 23rd was another event, as I call them, over what appeared to be Philadelphia area at the time.
Hmm.
I noticed approximately four or five horizon-to-horizon contrails. And then what caught my eye was a plane turning a complete circle directly over the city of Philadelphia.
Yep.
And I watched the entire thing, and I was just completely amazed.
Because you can see it so clearly on your photos on the website, the circle, and then that great big huge contrail that's coming through the circle and all those crossing the circle.
Right, and then today I received photographs taken from another vantage point in Wayne, Pennsylvania, of the same exact circle and contrails running right through the middle of it.
Same thing here. We're in flyover country. You know, they fly over us to get to San Francisco from Las Vegas or whatever, and it's flyover country. But we've had planes circling. I, too, took photographs of circles with it's up on the website. And so what in the hell is going on?
Well, and in those photos on May 23rd, Chuck, there is that extraordinary diamond. It looks like a light source, not a reflection to me. And what is it that you've received recently that is quite similar?
Well, the photographs I received from Wayne, Pennsylvania today, of the same circle I took photographs of, also show that same exact diamond shape.
And in these photos, as you look across on the web page, you see a very clear diamond. It's quite intense. And then it seems to be doing one of those fading out numbers that has been associated sometimes with we'll call it the craft of unknown origin phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And then about the same week that I was talking with Chuck Warren about his site, I received in the mail from northern New Jersey from a man named Ed Davio. He's up near the New York State, New Jersey border. And he sent two photographs, has the crosshatches right above his house. And it was the contrails in the sky doing these odd crosshatches that had provoked Mr. Davio to go outside with his camera and take photographs. When he got the photos back, and after they were developed, there are, and I'm looking at them right now, very intense, round, white spheres that have what appears to be a light pink corona around each of them in these two photos. And when Mr. Davio sent the photos, he wrote, quote, "There were six large jet aircraft in formation, one behind the other, but offset from one another and quite high. I could see the white whatever coming from the fuselage near where the wings connect. As they passed overhead, three more planes crisscrossed their white trails. Then they all made an abrupt turn and headed west toward Pennsylvania. At the time I took the pictures, I did not see the bright circular objects, nor did I see them while watching the jets continue on," unquote.
I think we're beginning to step on serious toes with this.
Art, if I may go back to the list of my recent visitors, there's two here I wanted to bring to your attention.
Oh, by all means.
Well, besides the Monsanto Company, which, if you'll recall, are the manufacturers for the Terminator seed.
Yes.
There is one called the Air Force Combat Climatology Center.
let's think about the title of that.
I know. That's
the Air Force, say it again, the Air Force
Combat Climatology Center.
Combat Climatology Center.
Their slogan is, past weather, our future.
Is it really?
I'm reading this directly off their website right now. In their mission statement, there's a few things that I'll read here. Engineering, design, and employment of weapon system. Weather-sensitive, multi-billion, with a B, dollar national programs controlled by the Secretary of Air Force. Department of Defense lead of air and space weather modeling and simulations.
Mm-hmm.
They've had repeat visits to my website.
Do they explain in their website why past weather is their future?
I haven't read it far enough. This was a very recent hit that caught my attention, and I will be sure to search this website thoroughly tomorrow.
And that's the one at janus.afccc.af.mil. That's on your list.
No, this is a different one.
Oh, okay.
This is, I guess, just occurred.
Yeah, I received this hit this morning, I believe it was.
Well, it's on your list from Monday, also, Air Force Combat Climatology Center.
Linda, have you ever heard of a title of an organization of that sort?
No, I never have till I read this list. And I'm curious also about the website addresses, because this is the Monday, June 7th list, Chuck. And it does appear to have that Janus AFCCC. Has that changed?
The Janus is not involved in there. It's just the AFCCC.AF.mil.
Interesting. I wonder what's the difference between Janus and this other one. Well, we ought to check that out.
Janus would be probably the name of the user or the computer system that it was received from.
All right. So AFCCC.AF.mil will take people to that website.
Right. And there is a big warning that this is a government computer system. Read first. So
read
be careful
first.
Going there.
Really?
Yes.
What does that mean? In other words, that's like the FBI warning at the beginning of videotapes, right?
Right. All the really strange and curious military sites all have disclaimers right smack in your face when you sign on them, and they all warn you that you are being monitored while you're on there.
Oh, well, little do they know. We're monitoring them while they're on our side, huh?
Hey, Chuck, what is the other one besides the AFCCC that you have done some work into?
I've looked into a lot of them. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the repeat visits I get from there are something else. I'd figured one time when my website was first put up that they had a steady connection to my website for approximately 12 days. every log I looked through, they were there. And there's so many of them. The Yucca Mountain one is very curious, too.
Yeah, that one bothers me.
That's down in Arizona, right?
No, it's here in Nevada. Yucca Mountain is in Nevada. It's right next to me, Linda.
Oh, okay. So Yucca Mountain is there, and there is another one that is in Arizona. All right.
You see, Yucca Mountain is where they plan to plant all of this high-level radioactive stuff.
That's right.
Right. They're looking to build a repository there.
That's we call it a depository. Yes.
And Chuck, of all of these now, your pages have expanded to way over 150. What have been some of the more extraordinary photographs that you have received that you have not taken?
A lot of them. I have received literally thousands of photographs just in a short period of time, along with reports from all over the country. I have reports from every state except for Hawaii. And I have reports from just about every province in Canada. And I'm getting ready to put up an international page and a Canadian mirror just to be able to handle the traffic.
Chuck, do you want to make a guess? You want to go out on a limb and give us what you think, since you're so closely involved in this right now? What's your best guess?
Well, I actually have two. Number one would be that this is some type of protective shield that they're testing for solar rays. There's a possibility that these have a reflective base, and the oily substance could produce a reflective base, and this could be used to protect against a solar flare that is supposed to come before the end of this year.
Yeah, there's some really heavy news on exactly that we're going to get to later in the program, so that's probably a pretty good guess.
Right, and the other one, I'm very intrigued with Dr. Robert Baker's nanobombs, and this could be dispersement tests to see how this stuff reacts in the atmosphere. There's just so many reports, and there's so much information here to be going through. And
I'll give you mine. I always thought it's, you know, trying to think on the benign side of things. I thought, what better way to inoculate a population without their knowledge against some sort of bio warfare weapon? And when I say inoculate, I mean, you know, you kind of catch a little cold, you have a little upper respiratory problem, and then it goes away, and you have been inoculated against something they think might be dispersed in our air.
That's a good theory. They do it during the daytime when people are out in public.
That's right.
The only thing I have a problem with that, Art, is the repeat spraying that's going on.
Mm.
This has got to be a multi-billion dollar operation. And I would think that if they were going to inoculate people via the air, that they would do it as a one-time shot. Rather than come back once or twice a month for many months.
Well, when I got my polio series, I had to have three.
That's also true. There's, like I said, as soon as I think to myself I have the answer, I ask myself one additional question, and I'm off down another road.
Now, obviously, a good question here for either one or both of you is, all of these agencies that are visiting your site, would you guess that they are checking, using you as a resource to check the effectiveness of what they're doing, or whether each agency is wondering if it might be the other guy who's doing it?
I would think that they would be checking to see what information I am providing to the public.
Think you're going to get a knock on the door, Chuck?
I've been expecting one, and the coffee's on. If they want to come and sit down and have a chat with me, the coffee's on, but I'm not going to stop presenting the information unless they physically take my computer out of here, and I'll just have to find another one.
Don't rule that out.
I've already been told by several people to watch what I'm doing here.
Have you received threats?
No, actually, Art, out of the thousands and thousands of emails I get, I've only received three negative emails, and they were probably from people with nothing better to do. And you can tell that they have people with nothing better to do because they don't sign their real name to them.
Uh-huh.
But I have not received really any negative responses at all. I've received quite an overwhelming response from the general public demanding answers, sending me photographs. On my website, I do have automatic reporting forms that people can fill out. There's one for both contrail events and for contrail sickness. This information is being compiled for all investigators in the field to use my website to further their cause and to try to get some answers to what's going on.
All right, well, here's one for either one of you. Do you feel that if this is some great threat, one of the theories I threw out to the American public, Canadian public, whatever, that our government would have a right with its charge to serve and protect like this, to do what they have to do to protect us? If it is that kind of situation, then would they have the right to spray us with some inoculation, if that's what it is, without our knowledge? Under those conditions, would you think they would have the right to conduct such a massive secret program?
Well, the context would be in the...
It always is.
Yeah, in the National Security Act of 1947, which if you go to a law library and you ask to see the National Security Act of 1947, the librarian will say, which volume? And when you go to the shelves in which the National Security Act of 1947 is spread out in volume after volume after volume, you realize that buried in all of the...
Some would illuminate for satellites and other high-altitude tracking, visual tracking.
Well, in fact...
these energy dispersals.
Right, exactly. And in your question to Chuck earlier about the visits from all of these agencies and why and the implications, there are two other things that have come to my mind, and one is... I think that a lot of these agencies would be actually grateful to Charles Warren and to others who are consolidating what people are photographing from all over North America. It's what is the public's reaction, what is happening everywhere, and that leads to the many photographs and eyewitness testimonies now of unidentified, that's the best we can say, unidentified aerial objects in or near the contrails.
All right, hold it right there, Linda. Chuck, maybe you'll get a thank you letter for the NSA. If you do, be sure to post it, okay?
I sure will.
All right, hold on, Chuck. We'll be right back to you. Listen to this. Linda and Chuck, listen to this and then your comments, please. Dear Art, regarding the chemtrails, it could be smart polymer plastics stated in the BBC. These smart nanoplastics assemble themselves in 20-sided ischondral structures. I learned in virology that that is a structure used by messenger RNA of any virus. The structure is a perfect structure. It assembles itself from sticky ends, positive and negative ends of a protein, used even today for geodesic housing created out of this 20-sided structure. Its architecture, the genius structure, comes from a virus, a genesis, I guess that is, I'm sorry. No, genius structure comes from a virus, but then again, maybe that is the point, you see. It is clear the polymer could be a coating of an artificial virus. Does that make any sense, Linda?
Well, if they're suggesting that our government would be spraying something out that was a virus for contamination, I have personal problems with that because people in the government have wives, children, husbands, too. And I personally think that whatever is going on is something that is of a defensive nature or a helpful nature.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily rule this out. In other words, you could vector something in the manner described, to do something ostensibly benign, right?
Well, I'm not certain from what you read if his implication is that this particular viral form would be used to carry in some kind of information or it would be a virus in and of itself. It's not clear.
All right.
But it does, Art, raise the interesting question about what are the unidentified aerial objects, ranging from Chuck Warren's diamond-shaped objects to the silver discs that you and I have talked about, and I've interviewed a lot of people, and we have photos of those, and these round, intensely glowing spheres, such as Ed Davies in northern New Jersey. And his two photos that everybody should really check out are on my earthfiles.com website in the June 3rd contrail story with Chuck Warren, and two other photos that you should all see that are in the Phoenix, Arizona contrail report on May 28th at earthfiles.com. And this is really quite extraordinary because it was 10 o'clock in the morning. It was in early May. And a guy named Gary Graham was experimenting with his new Kodak digital camera in front of his house in Phoenix.
Yes.
And he was puzzled by the number of contrails and that there were those X shapes again. And so he started aiming the camera sequentially just because he was provoked by the contrails. And he did not realize until he went to his computer to download the digital images that he had been taking at about 2 seconds apart in a series. And then the very last photograph had three unidentified objects in this frame that is there at the website, and the frame just before it, 2 seconds before, is also there. There's nothing in the clouds, the contrails, or the sky in the immediately preceding frame, and then suddenly, 2 seconds later, not only is there a white, what looks like a white spherical object, there are two black objects that look long. You almost think they could be jets, but he said, I couldn't hear any sound. I didn't hear anything. And he did not see them when he was photographing through his camera. What are these strange, unidentified objects that keep cropping up in association with the contrails as well?
I don't know. I saw an object associated with the contrail some time ago, but I'm not going to go into that. Let's go to calls. On our first-time caller line, you are on the air. Wait a minute. I see what I need to do here. Hold on a second. Let me try this, and let's make sure that... Chuck, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay, good. Let's go to our first-time caller line and say you're on the air with Chuck and Linda and Art.
Art?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not a first-time caller. That's why he caught me off guard.
Well, you're on my first-time caller line.
Okay.
You're not supposed to be. Anyway, very quickly.
Okay. first of all, I wanted to applaud you, Art, for your continuous exploration beyond the boundaries of socially acceptable knowledge.
There's a price, sir, I can assure you.
I have some comments to make. Rousseau, in his writings about the social contract about 500 years ago, stated that the government is supposed to represent the general will of the people. And I've noticed over the centuries that there seems to be a big gap that's being bridged between the people and the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the guest that you have on tonight and the subject you're talking about is just one more example of where I see like there seems to be this facade of democracy. Granted, I know our day-to-day lives are a lot better in this country than in other parts of the world. But at the same time, I see this facade of democracy to keep the people happy. But in reality, behind the scenes, there are government agencies like the ones that your guest had listed.
Yes.
That are basically doing what they want to do. And really, we have no say about it.
All right. Let's get comments on that from either one or both of our guests. Charles and Linda, are we living a facade of democracy? Is there, in your collective opinions, of something else going on behind the elected officials?
I think, Art, that was made clear by documents that have been released concerning the Truman administration, that there was a great deal of concern about what was crashing in a variety of places that were labeled unidentified craft of unknown origin back 50 years ago. And it set in motion, probably for very benevolent and very practical and very intelligent reasons, policies to keep the public and the media completely in the dark while government insiders tried to figure out what was going on and to ascertain, did they have a national security threat? So if you say that has been the context for all of their decisions for a half a century and counting, then right now we are living the legacy of continued entrenchment of that point of view. And I think at that, when you have had that long of inside government, highly classified, highly secret power over secret knowledge that is kept from the public, you are in a state where it may jeopardize what we consider to be a constitutional democracy.
Charles, you're newer to the scene. Same view or different? Charles? Well, Charles, we may have lost Charles, Linda. Hold on a sec here. And let's see if we can get Charles back. So let me see. What do I have to do? I'm going to have to do something to accomplish that. Stand by and we'll see if we can get Charles back. Stay right there, Linda.
William Shatner here for Priceline.com. Priceline is famous for letting people get airline tickets where they name the price. But just last week, we sold over 5,000 hotel rooms at Priceline. 5,000 hotel rooms is a lot of sleepy people. So if you're tired of high prices and want a quality hotel room, name the price you want to pay at Priceline on the Internet. I told you naming your own price at Priceline.com would be big. 5,000 rooms a week big.
All right, I think that we can try this again. Charles, are you back with us?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay, good. The question was, are we living in a sort of a facade of democracy? Linda took her shot at it. You're newer at this. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure what to think anymore. This country used to be run on honesty and hardworking people, and it seems to be that the more secrets and the more lies we tell, the further apart our citizens get from the government.
Right, I agree. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Charles Warren, Art Bell, Linda Moulton Howe. Hi.
Hey, Art. This is Brent in Houston.
Houston, yes.
740.
Yes, sir.
And I just have a report for you. I saw about 2 or 3 months before you started reporting these, I saw one of these spheres, but I saw it laying lines. It was the weirdest thing because I deliver papers at night. I was coming home, heading towards the sun coming up, and I saw this thing making wavy lines. And I thought, that's unusual, for a jet to be making these kind of lines. Then it started drawing like a rectangle on the sky. Then it drew another rectangle over the top of that. But I could see where the line was coming from, and it looked like one of these glowing spheres. I was wondering if anyone else had a report of that.
All right, you two. How many glowing sphere reports? Linda, you've been boring in on that one. Do you have associated with these contrails?
Probably in my own files now, more than half a dozen. But this is the first time I have ever heard anyone say that they actually associated the sphere with emitting the contrail.
Mm-hmm.
I've not heard this before. And I wondered, sir, could you explain again if he's still on the line?
No, he's not.
I just wondered.
But he was clearly saying that they were emitting these lines.
Right. I was curious exactly where he was geographically.
Houston.
I was going to ask him where precisely. But,
oh, I see.
Maybe what he could do if he's listening, could let me know at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Send an email there. And let me know, perhaps even your phone number. I would like to talk with you a little more about this, if that's possible.
All right, and you have a fax number also, Linda, don't you?
Yes, my fax is area code 215-491-9842. That's 215-491-9842. And I welcome information on the record or off the record, and confidences are always honored. But I think we are dealing with something in which it's very clear that something is going on that is extraordinary, and we all need to know more about what is behind it.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Howe and Charles Warren. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Tom in Sacramento.
Tom, you're going to have to speak up a little bit. In Sacramento, yes.
Yeah. Well, I had actually recently emailed you with regard to some of the activity that's been going on here in an area east of Sacramento. And it all started actually on Mother's Day that I happened to notice that they started spraying. And it seems as though they really like the crystal clear days that they actually start laying these grids of the chemtrails. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, they actually, something that you touched on before, they actually do periodically stop. So in other words, they'll be flying along spraying a chemtrail, and, you know, there'll even be a period of time where it'll actually stop for a period of time and then start again, almost like a tank has you know, been emptied and they're restarting up another tank or something like that. So it's really kind of interesting, and I'm just kind of wondering if, you know, we're able to document times and dates, if there's not some way to look at some sort of FAA records or something and actually, you know, determine, you know, who's actually flying over a particular area.
It's really a good question.
And Art, Chuck Warren did a fascinating research into satellite photographs, trying to look for contrails from satellites. Chuck, could you jump in here and explain what happened?
Sure. I'd like to comment first about what the caller said about clear days. If you go back and look at every single report, 100% of them, every report has a clear and dry day. It's a standard on my form. They can pick the type of weather that's going on during the event. And Mother's Day was a big reporting day for California. As far as the satellites go, I had gone back and tried to research the exact dates and times for the contrail events and cross-reference them with images stored in the archives for satellite data. And every single one I went to, the time period for the event date was blacked out. It was restricted. It was not allowed in it. And I have never been able to get into an archive satellite picture to look up if they've been caught on the satellites. Now, I did get one today with a visitor to my website in California sent me a quick note and a link to the satellite. And sure enough, you could clearly see the contrails just over one county, and I did take snaps for 3-hour period every hour, and I'll be posting the sequence tomorrow.
All right. We'll look forward to that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Charles Warren. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
Denver.
Denver, okay. You're going to have to speak up good and loud, and go ahead.
Okay. We'll see. Well, my name is Bobby. One night, me and my wife, we were just getting off from work. It was about 2:30 in the morning. and we looked towards the mountains. Well, actually, I was in the car first.
Yes.
And I looked towards the mountains, and I saw this, it was like a this red circular type thing with these trails coming from behind it.
Well, here we go again.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was going in a straight line, and like I watched it for like 3 minutes. Then my wife locked up everything. She came out. I was like, you know, just pointed to it and was like, look. And next thing I knew, right when we were getting ready to leave out of the parking lot, I just saw it fade out. It was really odd.
When was this exactly?
This was 2 weeks ago on Monday. It was a Monday night.
And you could see with your naked eye, not your binoculars.
Oh, totally, naked eye.
So it was large enough to be seen as round.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I really would appreciate it if you could either fax me the story with a phone number so I could talk with you also about it at that 215-491-9842 number.
Mm-hmm.
And because I would like to follow up your story and the Houston sphere emitting these wavy contrails on Mother's Day. So it sounds like this was occurring at approximately the same time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'll definitely give you a call.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Charles Warren. Hi.
Hi, my name's Sean. I'm in Las Vegas.
Yes, Sean.
I got two comments for you, Art. One is in regards to the happenings at the beginning of your show with the lights in the sky here in town.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I didn't see the red lights that the other callers were describing, but I did see a bright white light, and I'm out near the base at work. And, you know, I can tell the difference between the aircraft coming in, which I had F-15s, F-16s, the
sure.
A-10s coming in.
Sure.
But this one was out over northwest, out over Mount Charleston, kind of where they were describing.
Yes.
And I watched it for, you know, darn near 25 minutes, 30 minutes.
That's similar to the report we had in the first hour with Peter Davenport. Very similar.
Right.
Yes.
And then it dropped down in behind Mount Charleston, and then I come out of the landfill where I work, and it started moving back southwest, and then I lost track of it. You know, and I tried to get a hold of you guys, but, you know, what can you do?
I know. Do you have a question for my guests?
Yes. It's just a comment. You guys were talking about the contrails.
Yes.
And the theories behind the immunizations. You did a story a while back about the anthrax vaccinations, and they were kind of short on being able to take care of everybody.
Right.
So the theory behind this would be, you know, which would you rather have? Have to stand in line and then be told they're out of, you know, anthrax vaccinations, or the entire country vaccinated with, you know, some kind of an aerosol, airborne bacteria fighter, you know?
Yes, or certainly testing to see if something like the nanobomb oily water that Dr. Baker has discovered could be dispersed from airplanes, because they're going to have to do a lot of testing with winds and coverage to see what they have to do to disperse this stuff. So whether or not that's been part of what's going on, I don't know, but it would not explain, would it, what are these strange spherical objects?
All right.
I would still like to be able to make the determination for myself whether or not I wanted the vaccination.
You know, I'm with you, Charles. Somehow or another, they should be asking us. And I understand about national security. I had a clearance when I was in the Air Force. I know about that. But there are limits. Charles, listen, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. What is your website again, please?
It's www.contrailconnection.com.
All right. We'll have a, that's kind of like the crop circle connector. We'll have a link, of course, up on my website. And Charles, we'll have you back on the air as well.
Okay.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you,
Linda.
Thanks, Chuck.
Bye-bye.
Good night. That's Chuck, and Linda Moulton Howe will continue with us, because there's a couple of other things we have got to talk about. Busy night, coast to coast AM. Back to Linda Moulton Howe, but I wanted to hear this. Art, I'm listening tonight, and I find your program interesting. Thought you might like to know. I know someone that collected samples of the contrail debris locally. They ended up in the hospital for several days last month. The material was sent to a lab for analysis. It was found to be an extreme biohazard. Its gestation rate was within 48 hours, And this is the fastest rate the lab had seen in anything that they had ever looked at. The friend that sent it to the lab via FedEx was scolded for sending it without proper biohazard procedures. I've also talked to another friend in the military that told me that anthrax shots are a series of shots that have to be taken at a very specific time every day. And if you don't meet the timetable, the shots have got to be repeated. I was told it was a series of six shots every 24 hours at the exact same time every day. Could this be why the contrails are being repeated? Didn't know if you'd heard anything like it from anyone before. John, and I guess I should tell Linda and all of you about the following. I had Wayne Green on the other night, Linda, and he happened to mention anthrax, that he had read something about anthrax in this country with regard to the Iraqis. Well, I had a phone call from the FBI by noontime of the following day wanting to talk to Wayne, and I presume they did talk to Wayne Green. But I'm telling you, Linda, there's a lot of sensitivity out there, and all he did was mention he had read something.
Right.
And the FBI was there like that.
Well, remember, maybe it was on Dreamland that I did the interview with Dr. Henderson, who was recently appointed to this new bioterrorism center in Baltimore, and he is hooked up with Johns Hopkins University.
Right.
And he said in the interview that bioterrorism is a great concern to this government. They are especially concerned about anthrax and smallpox, and that coming up with enough vaccines to deal with just those two diseases alone would be possibly a three-year lag time. That's why I think that Dr. Baker's work is so important, because if you can literally explode the germs by simply spraying them with this emulsified oil and water mixture that has the detergent on the very small nano oil drops, you are doing something that you can spray all over the place. As
sure.
Dr. Baker said, you could spray down kids, schools, and buses, and no one would be hurt, and that you would kill 99.9% of the anthrax spores. Well, that's an incredible step forward, but according to him, his material hasn't been tested yet on a wide scale. I don't know if the right hand in the government could be doing something that the left hand doesn't know about.
Oh, I'd lay money on it.
Well, yeah, related specifically to the nanotech, but they might be trying it with something that is similar to try to test wind pattern dispersion, and I would be very...
All right, well, here you go. All right, here's a fax, Linda, from a doctor who faxes my show. I know him personally. He says, Art, my guess is that this would be part of a massive inoculation effort. I would further guess that the actual immunization may not have begun yet, and what we're experiencing now are preliminary efforts to test a variety of factors involved in the delivery of same and response, perhaps by utilizing mild pathogens of the population. Anthrax apparently may be a very real and very major threat. It is not a fun disease.
Oh, it's quite lethal.
So he's got a good point. We may be witnessing dispersal tests.
Exactly.
Not the real thing yet.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier with Chuck Warren, that that's the part that has made the most sense to me, that they have to start dealing with what happens in wind patterns, temperatures, and how much coating do they get to the ground at different altitudes. And these grids, the grid pattern, I've had a lot of discussions with people about that. When you have a grid pattern, it seems like you could be testing specific distances, speeds, and all of those, and that the people doing the testing would know the significance of the grid pattern.
God, I love our government. All right.
And you know something there, to follow up your comment on the changing weather?
Yes.
It was the June 3rd Nature Journal. And I talked with this atmospheric physicist, Drew Schindel, at NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies at Columbia University in New York. And his paper that's reprinted in Nature confirms that over the past 30 years, winter temperatures in the northern hemisphere have warmed up a full 10 times more than the global average increase, which is now about 0.9, almost 1 degree Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And that means, Art, that the west coast of the U.S., Canada, and most of Europe now have winters that are a full 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than they were in the 1960s.
I hear you.
This is the first time that Dr. Schindel, in this case, has been able to show with confidence that this chronic warming is a result of greenhouse gas emissions. This is another part of his presentation.
Yeah, but you know something? There's a survey out showing, Linda, that the more you talk about this to the general population, the more they don't care. And you know why? Because they think there's nothing they can do about it. And so...
But you know, it's implications and consequences.
I know.
And he and I talked about the fact that the current computer projections, which are his and a whole lot of other people's computer projections, that the winters on the west coast of North America and throughout Europe will continue to warm up for the next 60 to 80 years. And if they have gone up 10 degrees in the past 30, on the outside, they could go up to 20 degrees warmer, and you know that means more and more rain, possibly less and less snow, and people are going to have to deal with the implications of more flooding. And last winter in Europe, remember, the floods were the worst, I think, on record.
Well, more heat, more energy, bigger storms, F6 tornado. And listen, anyway, that's a whole nother show. Linda, there is a report out from the BBC News that is pretty worrisome in a lot of ways. I have a remote viewer named Ed Dames on here, and for the last year and a half or so, he's been talking about a killer shot from the sun. And, you know, people take it with a grain of sand, as they should when they hear this kind of thing. However, here comes this BBC report saying a tremendous explosion took place on the surface of our sun last Tuesday. It's nice to hear about it so late. And that for a few hours, astronomers were not sure whether it was headed directly for Earth or directly away from Earth. It was a biggie. As a matter of fact, the words they used to describe this blast, this coronal mass ejection, were some interesting words. They called it a planet buster. Now, that's pretty serious information. Now, fine, this time, they say, it was not headed toward us. But if it had been headed, come our way, Linda, what the hell do they mean by planet buster?
What they mean is that when you get a huge electromagnetic surge, it's going to interact with the magnetosphere and the ionosphere. And what's known now in circles in Washington as space weather up above our heads, where all of our satellites orbit, is of increasing concern because it can induce power blackouts. It could block radio communications. It could send the satellite spinning out of control. This has been a big worry. And in this release from the BBC, it says, quote, cellular phones, global positioning signals, and spacewalking astronauts were all at risk. I think that is what is behind that phrase, a planet buster, because if it's big enough and it hits our magnetosphere and ionosphere, it could knock out so much, because we put so many satellites up now and we are becoming more and more satellite dependent for so many things, military and civilian.
Yep.
And when you realize that we now are at a place where we are depending upon machines above our heads that are vulnerable to electromagnetic storms from the sun, it also explains why, when I was in Santa Fe last year for that conference of ionospheric physicists who came from all over the world, one of the big reasons for all the testing they are doing in HARP and in Europe and Arecibo and all over is that they know so very little about what exactly does happen in the ionosphere and how can they make satellites more immune to these electromagnetic influxes that has just happened apparently last week. And this is a part of science that is really trying to push in new frontiers, because we're talking about trying to now deal with machines that are put up anywhere, you know, in the 100 to 300 mile area. And we are dealing with strong inputs on a cyclic basis from the sun.
Well, we've got
how
a lot
do they
of,
shield for that?
Yeah, we've got a lot of them, Linda, that are a lot higher than that. They're in geosynchronous orbit in the Clark Belt. Listen, while, though, we're on the subject, and using the term planet buster, which is pretty scary, astronomers lately have been seeing these stars that for no discernible reason suddenly brighten tremendously, and they suggest that if a planet like ours were around a sun that brightened in the way they are now observing, we'd be toast.
Yes, that has come up many times, and there was this recent story, I think the star is Eta Carinae, that has been going through these really wild and inexplicable fluctuations, and I did a couple of reports last year about the gigantic gamma ray influx that, thank God, it was so far away in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen to our own sun? I guess that's the question mark. Do we have a stable sun? It certainly seems to be, but
there are fluctuations. There are some theories now that say even stable suns in a cyclic way suddenly do this, or can suddenly do this. This is what the astronomers are saying.
Right, these hiccups. But then it's an issue that our particular yellow sun, which is a G-type sun, is at least known to be more stable, and that some of the suns, like this Eta Carinae, are a different type of sun. And all I think that we can say is that astronomers are trying to understand this, and that we don't know enough about our own sun to say with guarantee that it won't happen.
That's right. They really are saying that they simply don't know enough yet to say that it wouldn't happen to our sun.
Right.
All right. We've got so little time. I want to cover a lot, Linda. I had a talk. You and I both personally know Bob Bigelow of the Bigelow
right.
Foundation. He funds a lot of ufology research. About 8 or 9 months ago, I talked to Bob, and he asked me what I thought would be good research fodder, you know, and I said, well, I've always been fascinated by the Brookings Report, which basically simplified suggests society would go bonkers if extraterrestrial visitation were known to be a fact. And I thought, well, that occurred so long ago, it'd be really interesting to go back to Brookings and do another study. And by gosh, I guess Bob did, and they said they weren't equipped for it. So I just got this press release, and apparently Bob Bigelow commissioned a Roper survey, which found, in a survey of 1,971 men and women, the following results. 1 out of 4 Americans think most people would, quote, totally freak out and panic if such evidence were confirmed. Check this out. 80% of influential Americans think the U.S. government would classify or suppress any evidence of extraterrestrial life. Now, Linda, that's... you rarely in America get 8 out of 10 Americans agreeing on anything, but they're saying 8 out of 10 say it would be kept a secret.
Of influential Americans.
That's right, influential Americans.
People
yes.
who are in jobs and positions to have impact on our sociology. And to me, that raises an even bigger question. What does that say about us as humans, that we would, that many people would assume that governments would deep seek something as important as contact with other advanced intelligences? What does that say about the human psyche? At one level, that's incomprehensible to me. It would seem that contact with any other kind of intelligence that would be known to political systems should be shared with the entire global human family. And the fact that everybody assumes that this is information that should be hidden because of the consequences to economic, social, and religious paradigms, I think that is a frightening statement.
And this virtually is saying, Linda, that nothing has really changed since Brookings. It's which is what I speculated about for years, that if we were to do a new report, and this report, frankly, did Brookings and then went beyond Brookings in scope, but nothing has changed. The reason for secrecy would be as big today as it was then.
And it also assumes that lying is a viable alternative at all turns in a story having to deal with information that is simply outside of current paradigms. I find that just extraordinary.
Well, but you've got to remember, Linda, with respect to our elected officials and those appointed in generally government today, how do you think they got where they are?
Again, what does that say about humans?
Well, that we're liars.
And that we can't face truths because it affects something that we've held in our mind in the past. And if that's the case, how in the world are we ever going to evolve forward into this next future?
I don't know. But there's more to this NID survey, this Roper poll, and we'll get to that in a moment. My guest is Linda Moulton Howe. She's been a reporter, science reporter, for years for us and has won numerous documentaries, documentary awards. One more item, actually two more items to discuss. Among other findings of this Roper survey, when asked what they thought, these influential people, what they thought UFOs were, 25% thought they were alien spaceships, 12% thought they were secret government programs. That's interesting. 9% said hallucinations. 19% said UFOs are normal events that are misinterpreted by witnesses, and 7% said travelers from other dimensions. Interesting, huh, Linda?
Yes, you might say that the last figure is surprisingly large, given the closed-mindedness that's reflected in the 80% would cover everything up.
Yes.
That range, 25% alien, assuming they meant extraterrestrial, 12% some kind of government machine.
Most thought aliens. The majority thought aliens.
Right. And 19% normal events. The fact that there is 25% now of this group that has been polled would put it in some sort of an alien extraterrestrial category.
Right.
I think is noteworthy, especially that this is a group of influential Americans who would say that 80% would say that they would expect the government to classify it all as a secret.
Now, the final set of stats is maybe the most intriguing of all. When asked whom they would choose to make first contact with ETs on Earth, 20% said the military. 29% said scientists, 14% said our government, and 11% said religious leaders, and then back to 20% saying some private organization that had planned for just such a contingency. What of that group, Linda, would you hope first contact would be made with?
That's such an interesting question.
How about Jerry Falwell? Would you want to Jerry Falwell? Bill Clinton.
You know, that is, to me, a bit of a mind stumper because it
how about Janet Reno? She'd move the tanks. That'd be it. What about scientists? I would take it you would probably opt for scientists, wouldn't you?
I don't know. What's running through my mind is that, according to military people, intelligence people, and then humans in the abduction syndrome, there is a variety of non-human intelligence types that have different agendas and motives. And whoever they are, if there is a plurality of them with mixed agendas, some of which may be spiritual and some of which may be just purely physical genetic harvesting, that would affect, I would think, who would be the most appropriate on the human side to interface. But I would guess that history has shown that who would be greeting would certainly have a military contingent to it.
It might be added for the audience's benefit, that this poll has an error margin of only 2.5%. Now, that tells you quite a bit. In other words, it was a significantly expensive poll to do, because most political polls give you about 3.5% or better error margin. So they obviously used a large sample here, and they got a 2.5% error margin.
What would you, Art, think could fall into that 20% category of a private organization designed specifically to do this interfacing?
Something like CSETI. CSETI. SETI? No. Private organization? The only one that I know that's out there actively trying to make contact is CSETI and Dr. Greer and company. I suppose MUFON, you know, the different organizations. I don't know.
It's just such a large number from a poll, a private organization, that it makes you wonder what the people who were polled had in mind.
I know this, that if it was the military, I wouldn't be too happy about that.
But they're always going to be part of any kind of an interface with that which is considered to be foreign technology or foreign anything.
Well, I know, but if an alien advanced race had been watching us recently, all the goings on, India, Pakistan, probably bombs in Kashmir, who knows, anthrax, terrorism, the bombing of Yugoslavia. I mean, if they've really been watching down on this and they decide to contact the military first, I'm going to be bummed out.
Well, then you come back to the mystery of the human abduction syndrome, and what some people have speculated is that this is a grassroots interface by an advanced intelligence or one or more advanced intelligences to specifically bypass government and political entities. And
boy,
go straight to the grassroots.
Yeah, I really would hope that's what would occur. But the fact that we don't know about it worries me, see? Because so many people agree, and I'm one of them too, that thinks the government would keep it a big secret, and that's what I think they're doing. I'm in that 8 out of 10. I believe that.
Yes, and in this country especially, which is we're supposed to be an informed democracy, but I don't think, Art, that it's worked that way for so long, and that Americans know that there is something wrong in the machinery of this country, and that's where all the skepticism and cynicism, bitterness, and actually I think festering hatred is coming about a system that is so out of sync now with the general population.
All right, let's take a few calls, Linda. What an interesting night. First time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Hi. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, all right, it's off.
Yeah, good. Where are you?
I'm in South Florida, Miami area.
Okie doke.
Actually, first contact you probably made with by the American Association of Cosmetologists.
Cosmetologists.
Show them how to put on makeup.
You know, in modern America, you've got a pretty good point, I'm afraid. You know, if they don't look palatable, run them through makeup two or three times, and the American people could handle that.
Make them presentable.
Yeah, or put them in suits so they'll be less frightening.
Exactly.
Suits.
Linda, I just read a couple of things in Alien Agenda by Jim Mars, some references to you.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
Fascinating book.
Yes, it is, and he is a good friend of mine and an excellent writer.
Another author, Paul R. Hill, was a NASA scientist for many years.
Oh, yes.
He wrote a book, Unconventional Flying Objects.
And which nobody really knew about until he died.
True. But he has a section in there on angel hair, where disc and cigar-shaped objects all over the world back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s were seen to be dispersing angel hair or spider webs.
Right.
Phenomenon.
That's right.
It might be related to what's going on now. Maybe we're using some of that technology in conjunction with these contrails or chemtrails.
I don't know. See, that's a huge speculative leap, and if anybody in the government knows, they aren't talking. And I know that the angel hair versus spider web was a big issue for a while. It was almost as though, like the balloon, the weather balloon was used to cover up one or more of the crashes in New Mexico.
Right.
Spider webs were used to cover up the fact that a substance of unknown either makeup or origin was coming down all over the country.
Well, you say that people have seen disks and spherical objects near the chemtrails.
True.
That's what's got me wondering if there is some tie-in from what was going on back in the 50s and 60s to what's happening now.
But we aren't dealing with that angel hair phenomena. We're dealing with what appears to be some kind of a substance that has made rainbows in the sky, and people have said has had a kind of oily appearance, or that they've had a residue fall, whereas the angel hair, as the name describes, was a substance that people could pick up and put in jars and did.
Right. They took it to universities and had it, tried to have it analyzed.
And most of the reports that got out to the public said they were spider webs.
Right. But it seems to me that, there was a reporter here in Miami, Rad Berkey, at the Channel 10's ABC station, who did a report on Homestead Air Force Base, and the planes down here are dispersing a real fine chaff for radar dispersion, and it makes huge clouds in the local weather radar. And
Currently.
Did an analysis of it, and the local governments are getting upset, thinking that maybe it could affect people's breathing if they breathe in this real fine fiber.
Did you learn what it's made out of?
It's a very, very fine metallic. They didn't say exactly, but it's a real fine metal strands. It looks like very, very fine hair. A little short lengths, maybe 2 or 3 inches long.
Not my idea of fresh air.
Well, yeah. If you could find out, if there's anybody who knows, or a reporter, or if there's any lab that has done tests, and you could get in touch with me, I'd very much like to know what the elemental composition of that material is, if you
mm-hmm.
can find out.
I'll do that.
And do you have my fax number?
I'm taping this program. I'll go back and get it
okay.
off the tape.
All right.
And for people listening, if you have any other information, my fax is 215-491-9842.
Somehow the idea of minute metallic particles being inhaled as part of my air is not appealing.
No, nor mine.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Larry in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes, Larry.
I have a transcript of both of the Rad Berkey shows that I can send to Linda.
Thanks.
Can she receive it by email, or must it be by fax?
Yeah, you can send it by email to earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Okay, because I know you had several different places to send different things on your site.
Right, but that's a generic, earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Right. I also have a tape I got a tape actually of both of the shows, and he basically deals with the radar screen aspect of it, and the reason, you know, why they dropped the chafe to cause a missile to not strike the plane. And he doesn't really get into tankers at all. It basically just is the chafe. The only problem is that on their weather radar, it shows so much chafe that when the Air Force guy denies that it could come from their planes, you almost believe them, because they actually, in the piece, show the chafe being put under the wing and everything. And, I mean, they're just showing them everything like they have nothing to hide. And they say that they regularly train with it. But if you look at the radar, if so much of it spread across the Keys, it's almost, you know, 50 miles worth, and it wouldn't come out of those tiny little canisters.
Well, did anybody ask the military guy if there is this much radar chaff in the air and it's not attributable to them, where would it be coming from?
No, he was using it as his denial, and the analysis of the stuff actually led them to a woman in Nevada. Part of the story took place with an environmentalist lady that was in Nevada, who said that she has been studying this for a while in Art's neck of the woods, and she says that it is not very healthy. It contains things that you don't want to breathe.
Well, you know, again, we're back to this mystery of what could be motivating our government, for a positive reason, to be putting a lot of things in the atmosphere, perhaps at different altitudes, because they are concerned about something.
Well, Linda, this only relates tangentially. When I was in the Air Force, I was stationed at Kadena Air Force Base, the island of Okinawa, while Vietnam was going on, and we were bombing in Cambodia and Laos and stuff. And, of course, the Air Force denied outright that there were any B-52s taking off that were involved in any missions of that sort at all. And I worked for a Japanese company at the time, after I got out of the Air Force, a broadcasting company. They would send a Japanese reporter down to the end of the runway off base at Kadena Air Force Base, and they would interview an Air Force spokesperson who would stand there and deny that any such missions had ever taken off, that any such airplanes even existed on that base. Mm-hmm. And as he was making his denial, you could see the B-52 taking off right over his head. And they would run this on Japanese television every day or two, and it was a riot. So will they stand there and deny something, even in the face of it rising behind them? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if there's a lot of chaff out there, I'm not surprised they're saying no. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. This is Errol calling from Corvallis, listening to 1340 KLOO.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah, I have actually a question and a comment. I'm actually glad to talk to you guys, Linda and Art. Very honored to talk to you. And the question I have the comment I have first is I've lived in the same apartment here in the same place for about 7 years now. I played the same basketball hoop right around my house. And, I mean, I've been playing the same place for same summer, you know, for over 7 years. And it's just in the last year now that there's been a condensement of these contrails that's been going around.
That's correct.
And, I mean, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, you can ask anybody here, just a common base, you know, that over the past, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years, there's just been a large condensement of these contrails. And I'm just wondering, and I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know this, is why all of a sudden of condensement of these contrails in the last 2 years? Why haven't we been seeing this maybe 5, 10 years ago? You know, aircraft has been around.
The obvious answer to that, sir, is because they weren't doing that 10 or 20 years ago. I mean, it's obvious.
Right. It's related to what is behind the contrails, what is going on that started in the past several months.
That's it.
That's what we're all trying to find out.
That's right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hi, let me turn my radio.
Oh, turn it off, actually, all the way off.
You know,
where are you located,
I'm
sir?
At Worcester, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston.
All right, you still got your radio on.
Oh, I thought I...
I'm going to turn it off. It's an absolute mandated thing.
I'm very sorry. Hold on, just one second.
Put the phone down. We'll even wait. Because it really confuses
you.
Know, yes.
Hello?
Yes.
My feeling is, and I'll tell you why, that when there are those that profess to be taken by extraterrestrials.
Yes.
It happened to me twice, about 6 or 7 years ago, very close times together. It was like 6 months apart. And I went through the same thing where I was like, I couldn't move. Suddenly I was on a very hard slab. It felt very, very uncomfortable. And there was 3 or 4 personages around me in white.
And you were remembering this totally consciously, not from hypnosis?
No. This was like in a dream state, you know, like I had gone to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But before I went to sleep, it was like I was paralyzed, like I couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
In both of these instances. And I made a sign of the cross because my faith is Catholic, so instinctively we're brought up to make the sign of the cross when we're in danger. Anyway, I felt that I made a sign of the cross. The first time, I immediately got back to my bed. It was like, boom. About a week ago, you were talking about various ways in which people got out of this state, and I wanted to call them, but I couldn't get through. The second time it happened, it was as though, now I know this sounds far out, but it was as though I was being asked to reject my faith, like Jesus, reject. And I said no. And I went to make the sign of the cross, and 3 or 4 of these objects, these people, personages, grabbed my hand to hold me back from making the sign of the cross. And when I completed the cross, and I forced myself to do it, through the strength of them holding me back, and when the cross was done, I know this sounds far out, but this happened to me, and it was over.
All right,
I've never been bothered again. It's been 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I understand. All right, well, now I think we have a case here of somebody reacting in the way, in the only way they can react. If you have an absolute faith that everything is connected to God, and if it isn't, it's the other, it's the bad guys, then you're going to react in the way that man did. If you're not of religious a religious point of view, you're going to react and tell a very different story. That would be my take on what I just heard.
Well, you know, Art, it is interesting that in the last, I would say, 30 years at least publicly of the human abduction syndrome, going all the way back to Betty and Barney Hill and coming up, there have been repeated cases in various researchers' files where someone has consciously, they've waked up and they're paralyzed, and
oh, yes,
there is a being in the room or being.
Real quick, where is the
number? And they say, they call in the name of Christ for help or God for help, and then all of a sudden everything disappears and they
That's
are
right.
not abducted.
That's right. That's something for everybody to think about. I've got one more hour. Do you want it?
If you want, or if you want to do open phones on something else, I'll go to bed.
Your choice, Linda.
I'll stick with you if you want.
All right, sticking with us you are. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, these companies, they love these numbers that spell out something. All right, Linda, welcome back.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I wonder, in addition to the contrail, chemtrail issue, if we could go back for a minute to the crop circles, because Paul Anderson, who runs the Millennium Project up in Canada,
mm-hmm.
sent me an interesting report recently from Israel. Barry Shamish is a journalist over there who has followed the crop circle story in Israel for the last several years, and he wrote, quote, that on the afternoon of March 20th, which was this year, I believe, the first day of spring approximately, a significant crop formation was discovered in the Jezreel Valley. It was the third formation found in the Jezreel Valley in the past year. The formation was barbell-shaped with two circles of 9 meters diameter joined by a straight line, also 9 meters long and 90 centimeters wide. 800 meters away, an 11-meter diameter circle was found in addition. The formation, but the stems were not broken. The Jezreel Valley boasts numerous important biblical sites, including the Har Megiddo, which is supposed to be Armageddon, where the final battle before Judgment Day is prophesied, and Mount Tabor, where Jesus meditated for 40 days before beginning his ministry.
Linda,
this is from Barry Shamish.
Linda, you know, what you've just said can be summed up by saying you can't rule out the possibility that the Bible's right, that the end days are close or upon us, and that these are signs we are seeing. I mean, it's as much of a possibility as little guys in spaceships, plasma balls, Doug and Dave, any of the other million explanations one might have. The religious folk could be right on the mark, and we're just seeing what they're saying.
Yes, I think that there's always this spiritual river that flows through all of these phenomena, but there's something that I also like to keep in mind and have done a presentation about the last year, and that is the fractal nature of the universe that we live in, which relates to repeating cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And that in these repeating cycles of fractals, there are always expanding, evolutionary, changing patterns. There are repetitions, yes, and you can see the recognizable patterns of the past and the present, but the future may change enough to not be exactly like the pattern before. And I guess that is part of all this that I hold the door open, that we may have been given a lot of warnings in religious literature, in Nostradamus, in a whole lot of things about a future course. And yet, right now, it seems to me that there are evidences that people are trying to shift where our future could be going, and that maybe this is part of some grand spiritual test. Can we shift enough to avoid Armageddon?
Well, it's not strict science, but it's strictly logical. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Lynn Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Farmington, New Mexico.
Okay.
I have a couple of comments. The first is in regard to the contrails. Linda mentioned a diamond shape in earlier that appeared to be glowing or emitting light.
Mm-hmm.
I read an article in Popular Science a while back about a secret project in Alaska that was, they were trying to change the weather.
Oh, you're talking about HAARP.
HAARP, yeah.
Yes, HAARP. In other words, could any of these contrails, there has been some pretty interesting speculation, Linda, that this polymer, whatever it is, could be released in the atmosphere in conjunction with a test of something that would modify the weather. In other words, mm-hmm. a reflective element or absorbing element in the atmosphere that would work in conjunction with high levels of low-frequency radiation.
You know, the problem, Art, is that none of us know enough to really comment. It is so speculative. I would like to know what the government knows and what it's doing, but I also can step into their shoes and say that if they let us know everything that they were doing, then their perceived enemies would know what they were doing, and that a lot of this probably has to do with countering perceived enemies.
Yeah, they always have black shoes, you know. Government shoes are always black. Wild card line.
And black hats.
That's right.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning on the wild card line. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Dan in McLean, Virginia.
Hi, Dan.
The question I have a couple of them, but one would be concerning the contrails. It'd be interesting to see where they are not getting reports where they're being sprayed, like maybe Washington, D.C., some of the military areas, NASA, and Fort Meade, Maryland.
Yeah, I'd worry mostly about Washington, D.C. If there's none over Washington, D.C., then we're in trouble.
Right.
Remember Chuck Warren said that he had gotten reports and photographs now from every state in North America.
Except Hawaii.
Except Hawaii.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting.
Maybe Hawaii is a control group. Anyway.
The second part I was going to ask you is I find it difficult to believe that they would be doing it for a benevolent reason, you know, like to inoculate us, because this stuff is so contagious from the samples that you've gotten.
That is a problem.
Yes. It's laying people out.
Yeah, he makes a very good point, Linda. You want to believe, and I want to believe, that it would be a benign thing. They were trying to help us in some way. But the ingredients that we've seen so far don't seem to lean in that direction.
But there have just been such few samples that have actually, like that one that went to a lab, I don't know really of much of any of this that has actually gotten to the lab stage. And where I had my own experience standing out in Sedona and then mm-hmm. 2 days later in Phoenix under these gigantic X's being made with other people, but none of us got sick.
Yeah, but this guy actually touched samples in collection and he went to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, it's slim evidence to be sure, but it's something to think about. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, this is Steve in Raleigh.
Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Steve.
Yes, I have an idea that may tie several things together I've heard on your show over the weeks. Like the pilots getting a sunburn at night.
I wonder if I told Linda about that.
No, I haven't heard this.
Oh, you're going to love this one, Linda. And what else, sir?
Well, it might possibly tie in with what the government might be doing with these chemtrails if they are not meant to protect us.
Yeah, when you're talking about radiation, I mean, you're dead right. All right, check this out, Linda. I got a fax from a first officer.
Mm-hmm.
Of an air commercial air line that he didn't want to name, that flies a nightly route to Minneapolis, St. Paul, you know, up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, Art, you know, last night, and I'm paraphrasing now, but I'm going to be very close. He said the entire sky was lit up with northern lights, not the normal shimmery northern lights, but the entire sky was illuminated. And he said, the pilot told me he began to feel disoriented. And I began to feel disoriented. And this went on for some time and then cleared up when they landed the next night. I got another fax from a first officer, again, of a major airline. Not only did he say that they had experienced the same thing near the same route, but Linda, you know they wear headsets with a microphone.
Right.
This man, and these are nighttime flights, Linda, this man had sunburn on his face. Pretty serious sunburn, and you could see where his headphones were. You know, it was white there, and it burned around the rest of his face.
Well, the only thing I know that could do that is microwave frequencies at some frequency level.
Yeah.
And that is a known effect from microwave frequencies.
Yeah, but that's a lot of microwave, Linda.
Well, that is, that poses what was the frequency and the exposure, and what would have caused an intense brightening of the sky.
Right.
That was not related to the classic Aurora Borealis.
Right. Those are the questions.
And that the fact that there is sunburn is, to me, I don't think that anybody's ever reported Aurora Borealis causing sunburn.
Check. I reacted the same way. Something to think about, anyway. Welcome to the Rockies. You're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Linda. This is Shane in Denver, 630 KL.
KL, of course. You're going to have to yell at us a little, but go ahead.
No problem. I have a couple of questions, if you give me the chance. Going with the theory that the cattle mutilations are some sort of environmental monitoring, has there been any increase in that since the chemtrail started?
She'd be the one to answer.
No. In fact, this has been an extremely quiet year. There have been some isolated cases of some unusual animal deaths. And in fact, one series, I guess you would say, of eight dogs dead and a ninth attack in Woodleaf, North Carolina in May was not exactly the classic mutilation, but reminded me of the chupacabras, which we have not heard about since June of 1996.
I read that story the other night, Linda. They have no idea. Fang marks in the neck is what they're coming up with.
I interviewed the head of the environment office that had the animal control office do a necropsy on the eighth dog. I talked with the owner of the eighth dog that was dead and the ninth that was attacked two nights later. The description of the wounds is a quarter of an inch wide, one penetrating approximately 4 inches into the chest of that eighth dog and taking a part of the heart. There were about 11 such quarter-inch holes on that ace dog, and the owner said there was no blood, that the wounds were really quite dry, and that on the when they did the necropsy, that the fact that there was a hole that went 4 inches, that would seem to contradict the tooth of a mountain lion or another kind of cat or predator. And Dr. Soto in Puerto Rico, when I was there investigating the chupacabras mystery, he had a rabbit that was brought in by one of the TV stations for necropsy, and he described, and we had on the radio on Dreamland and or Coast, that he went into a hole in the bottom of the jaw of the rabbit and measured it 4 inches penetrating into the brain, where brain tissue had been taken. Again, no blood. I'm not saying that there is a chupacabras proof here, but it is interesting that eight dogs dead, a ninth attack.
They're worried about humans. You wouldn't want to go for a night walk in the woods in North Carolina right now, would you?
Well, in Woodleaf, which is sort of in that, quite a ways from Charlotte, but it's out in the rural area. But there was one more interesting point for people who may or may not be listening and had anything like this happen. In Puerto Rico, Mexico, Central America, where these strange puncture wound attacks occurred back in 95 to June of 1996, the last known attack being in 1996.
Yes.
There were often descriptions, and I've seen photos of this, of what looked like a thick saliva on the hair of the animals, either around the puncture marks or just on the hair. The owner of the 8th dead dog and the 9th attack, both dogs had this very, very thick saliva-like liquid all over the heads of both of those dogs.
Great. Hey, caller, want to meet a new creature?
Sure.
You had another question?
Yeah, actually, I was wondering if Linda had any recent information on the San Luis Valley and might suggest to Yart if you could maybe do a show on the valley and maybe Linda could put you in touch with Chris O'Brien.
Well, I tell you, the person to talk to down in southern Colorado is Lou Giroto. He's been sheriff at the where Fano County Sheriff's Office now for, oh gosh, it's way more than a decade. And
But what are we referring to here?
Oh, this is the area in southern Colorado where the first public animal mutilation was reported back at the end of the 60s. The horse named Lady, the Appaloosa mare, found stripped of flesh from the neck up, associated with strange aerial craft in the valley. What he's talking about is that from the sand dunes and the Sangria de Cristo Mountains, when you go west and south, there is an area there that has for decades has been associated with very unusual activity, both in the sky and an awful lot of animal mutilations. And if you go then further east, past the Sangrias, you come to a town called Trinidad. And that's where Lou Giroto, one of the most honest law enforcement people that I've ever met or interviewed when it comes to telling the public exactly what he knows.
Yeah.
And he's the man in the documentary A Strange Harvest.